From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Great program for you in store tonight. Later on, we're going to take a little walk on the paranormal side. Happy birthday, by the way, to Emily Doyle of Los Angeles. Many, many more, Em, many more. Here's what's happening. More than 600 doctors have signed onto a letter sent to President Trump pushing him to end the national shutdown aimed at slowing the spread of the coronavirus, calling the widespread state orders keeping businesses closed, kids home from school, a mass casualty incident with growing health consequences. Now, the letter outlines a variety of consequences that the doctors have observed resulting from the coronavirus shutdowns, as we've been talking about for months now, including patients missing routine checkups that could detect things like heart problems or cancer, increases in substance and alcohol abuse, and increases in financial instability that could lead to poverty, financial uncertainty, and also, of course, the possibility of suicides. For those of you still wiping down groceries and other packages amid the ongoing coronavirus pandemic, you can breathe a little sigh of relief. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention now says that the virus does not spread easily from touching surfaces or objects. But experts warn that that doesn't mean it's no longer necessary to take practical and realistic precautions. They just can't get it right. Let's check in with Howard Bloom, our expert for the moment. What do you say about this week, Howard?
Well, the deal is that the world has just experienced the biggest one-day jump in coronavirus cases ever. More than 100,000 new cases in a mere 24 hours. Meanwhile, America is now up to 93,431 coronavirus deaths. We are adding deaths at the rate of roughly 44,000 per month. That's as many of us dying in a single month as died from auto accidents in an entire year, and it's as many dying in a single month as died from the standard flu in the year 2014. Now, presumably, once we all go back to work, that number of coronavirus deaths will increase, the way it skyrocketed for meat plant workers, who suffered 14,000 cases of the coronavirus because of working hard at close quarters to keep our meat supply coming. Among meat plant workers, there have been 48 coronavirus deaths, deaths of relatively young, strong people. Just because meatpacking workers were told to ignore the pandemic and do their job, the debate between those who want the country shut down and those who want it opened up again rose to a whole new level this Tuesday with the letter you were just talking about. The president wanted a statement from physicians who agree with him to combat the pessimism of Anthony Fauci and Deborah Birx. So a Trump campaign staffer and the Republican activist group CNP Action organized a squad of 200 physicians who sent a letter to the White House proclaiming that the shutdown was doing more harm than the coronavirus itself. As you just said, the doctors pointed to what they called mass casualties produced by patients missing routine checkups, alcohol abuse, and increases in financial instability, which is closely linked to poor health. And it is. What these doctors may have overlooked is a lesson from history. Remember the Spanish influenza of 1918 that killed up to 100 million people worldwide. That flu came in four waves over the course of 2 years. The first wave hit in March 1918, just like us, March. When the summer came and it was over, people felt they could stop quarantine measures and go back to normal, and they were wrong. In October, a second wave hit and killed more people than the first. Then, over the course of more than a year, came the next two waves. One more thing. Our focus on the coronavirus is taking our eyes off of the big picture. Where do we stand in the world, and how are we doing in our competition with China to dominate the mid-21st century? It turns out that we are not doing well, and that our response to the coronavirus is not helping matters. Our traditional allies in NATO are turning away from us. In a Pew survey, 71% of Germans said our handling of the coronavirus crisis has lowered their view of the United States. Only half that, 36%, said the coronavirus had lowered their view of China. More important, 50% of Germans a year ago said that close relations with the United States were important. Today, that's down to 37%, which now puts us just 1 point ahead of China. Meanwhile, another poll shows that just 2% of the French trust our president to lead the world. Just 2%. To quote a report on this polling from Germany's social development group, Körber Stiftung, and the Pew Research Center, quote, "The president's comments speculating that disinfectant might be used to treat coronavirus patients caused widespread disbelief and horror in many European countries. And the report quotes this from the Irish Times columnist Fintan O'Toole, quote, over more than two centuries, the United States has stirred a very wide range of feelings in the rest of the world, love and hatred, fear and hope, envy and contempt, awe and anger. But there is one emotion that has never been directed toward the U.S. until now, pity.
And let me ask you this, Howard, where do you stand on opening up?
It's a difficult issue, George. We obviously have to get our economy going again. But I personally, I've been holed up in my apartment. And I see almost no strangers except from a distance of 7 or 8 feet. And I'm not comfortable getting out of here and going back to a chocolateria, a cafe, where I have people just a foot and a half away from me.
Well, but you've had prior medical conditions, and I think you should stay home because
of
that.
And I'm 76 years old, so I'm right in the bullseye of the target. But I do 1,220 vibrational plankings a morning, and I'm actually strong as hell. So we'll see. But I'm very apprehensive personally.
Don't forget that old saying, Howard, would you rather live one day as a lion or a lifetime as a lamb? Think about that. That's Howard Bloom, his website, howardbloom.net. Well, those of you who have been holed up in your house for a while, listen to this study. It shows that 70% of you would rather watch movies at home instead of going to the theater, the new movies. It's a new consumer survey. Interesting, is it not? Something we talked about some time ago. The economy has gone from President Trump's greatest political asset to perhaps his biggest weakness right now. Unemployment is spiking at an unprecedented rate. Consumer spending is vanishing. Gross domestic product is collapsing. History shows that dreadful economic trends like these spell doom for sitting presidents seeking re-election. Let's check in with Charles Koppus, our expert and author of America's Financial Reckoning Day. Chuck, do you think we're going to bounce back or not?
I don't think it's going to be very soon, George. You know, all 50 states now are allowing people to reopen the businesses, and we really need this.
Of course, yeah.
But the Atlanta Fed is predicting a 43% drop in GDP this quarter. And as I said a couple of weeks on your show, I don't think there's going to be a V-shaped recovery. It's more of an L-shaped economy now. This is going to be long-term, I'm afraid. The pandemic has ended a 12-year business cycle inflated by the Fed. In fact, we had the Fed chairman on 60 Minutes Sunday night. Did you see that?
I heard about that. I did not see it.
He said they're not out of ammunition by a long shot and really no limit to what they can do. So stocks went up Monday morning, 1,000 points. This is maddening. This continues to be the disconnect between, you know, Wall Street and Main Street, because Main Street is really suffering. This is a different world, George. Way too much dependency now on the government. In fact, entitlements were growing at 8% a year against 1 or 2% GDP. That was prior to this COVID virus crisis. So this could lead to civil unrest, perhaps challenges to our civil liberties. And your guest tonight for Stuart Rhodes, he's going to talk about this. And I just pray we can get through this. It's going to be a hard time. I would be hedging in gold and silver just because that's a real safe haven.
You got that right. Thanks a lot, Charles. Charles Koppus, his website, of course, is Chuck Koppus, COPPES.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. The end of the program, you'll get a summary, of course, of everything we've got talked about, and we've got all the websites and things like that there. Up next, as Mr. Koppus said, Stuart Rhodes joins us. Is it unconstitutional for us to be in this lockdown? That's one of the things we'll talk about with Stuart next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We've got a guest today that I have a lot of respect for, Stuart Rhodes, the founder, national president of Oath Keepers. He served as a U.S. Army paratrooper until disabled in very rough terrain parachuting accident. He is a former member of Congressman Ron Paul's Washington, D.C. staff. He worked on both of Ron Paul's presidential campaigns. Stuart graduated from Yale Law School, where his paper, Solving the Puzzle of Enemy Combatant Status, won Yale's top prize for a paper on the Bill of Rights. Stuart has served as a volunteer firefighter, as a state-certified concealed carry arms instructor, of course, self-defense as a volunteer instructor in college and in law school as well. He also works on preventing assault against individuals, teaching them prevention. Stuart, welcome to the program. Interesting night this is going to be. Good to have you back.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
How have you been?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm in St. Louis right now, and Tommy is in California, our producer, and we had an event canceled in Houston, a live event, which may be just as well, but because I guess had he come in from California in Texas, they would have quarantined him for 14 days. That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, Texas, people are looking at all the liberal-run states, and they're trying to make the argument that they're worse, but Texas is actually pretty far down that road as well. Governor Abbott has gone quite a bit down the rabbit hole.
Aren't there any liberals who look at the Constitution and just simply say, folks, this just isn't right right now?
Well, there's a lot of conservatives, I'm seeing it here in Texas, who are of the same mindset. And it's the same thing we saw post 9/11. You know, emergency mindset, this is a new world, we have to set aside rights for security. It's the same exact false choice you're being given again with COVID-19. This is a medical 9/11.
This lockdown, which I don't believe is working medically, has crippled the economy, has ruined some lives, has, you know, turned the economy upside down, and I don't know when it's going to rebound. You've probably heard Chuck Coppice, our news guest, talking about he thinks it's going to be some time. Is this constitutional, in your opinion, or not, Stuart? Shutting things down?
No, I don't think it is. You know, the reference to the 1918 Spanish flu, they didn't do this during the Spanish flu. Even though it killed 675,000 Americans, they did not force the healthy to stay indoors. Now, you quarantine the sick, you don't quarantine the well. And that wasn't done. Even in that dire circumstance, they didn't shut down the economy. There was no Orwellian declaration of what is essential and non-essential activities. I mean, just the other day, we heard the NYPD on bullhorns telling people that at a protest that the governor and the mayor of New York City had declared their activities non-essential protests, and there was therefore an unlawful assembly, and they had to disperse with the arrested. This is like waking up in Brave New World. That's what this is like.
It really is, and what's so bizarre is the lockdown hasn't solved the issue at all. The problem is still there, and I've always said,
well,
and I've been
did, right. If the flattening the curve was the whole goal, we've done that. But they've moved the goalpost. Now it's you're going to be, you know, we're forced to live under this new paradigm of emergency rule until there's a vaccine. That's the new shift.
Which there may never be a vaccine. Who knows, right?
Well, whether there's one or not, that's not the point, though, is that they excuse this draconian lockdown of society under the logic that you have to flatten the curve or we'll have overwhelmed hospitals like you saw in Italy. And so people were like, okay, we can accept that for 2 weeks or so, but we'll stay home and shut down the schools. But then that came and went, and now it's, like I just saw Governor Abbott yesterday saying, hey, at some time in the future, we're getting closer and closer to a cure, and when that cure is created, we'll be free of COVID-19. Until then, we have to coexist with COVID-19. That's his logic. We'll be under this perpetual emergency until we have a vaccine. And of course, the elephant in the room then is then what? We're going to be compelled to take the vaccine.
And isn't that unconstitutional as well?
I think so. I think it violates the Fourth Amendment. You have a right to your, people. The people have a right to their own personal, themselves and their papers and effects to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures.
I mean, I don't even take the flu shot, Stuart. I don't tell people not to take the shot. That's their business. If they want to take a shot, let them take a shot. But I surely don't want to be one of the people to get some experimental vaccine that they truly haven't tested and pump it into all of us, because the ramifications could be horrible.
Well, and as Robert Kennedy Jr. has pointed out, the vaccine companies, all of the big pharmaceutical companies, are immune from being held liable.
That's
if
right.
They do harm you. They can be absolutely gross negligent and still get away with it because they're protected. They give them, special status of protection.
He
pointed out also that, around the world, they've sterilized in the third world, they experiment on poor people with these vaccines. And they've been sterilized, they've been paralyzed and caused, blindness and all kinds of horrible effects with no consequences.
Absolutely. I mean, there could be a memo somewhere that says this new vaccine that we're working on will do X, Y, and Z to harm people, and there's nothing we can do about it illegally. It's crazy.
Right, because they've captured the political system. And that's the other big thing that people need to realize. It's like this is a new you know, it's kind of like the military-industrial complex morphed into the intelligence-industrial complex in the name of the war on terror, and now this is the medical-industrial complex. These huge, massive pharmaceutical companies stand to make trillions of dollars, which is exactly why they don't tell you to take zinc or get your sunshine and vitamin D, and downplaying hydroxychloroquine because it's a, you know, it's a really old drug that's no longer under a patent. They can't make money on that. So they want to suppress knowledge about that, and they want to focus only on this false choice of you are all in lockdown and nothing's going to go back to normal until you take the vaccine, which we will sell at this high, you know, high dollar amount.
Stuart, are our founding fathers who created the Bill of Rights turning over in their graves?
No, I think so. I mean, they went through a smallpox epidemic in the middle of the Revolution, right? The very beginning of the Revolution, actually. So they dealt with that kind of a kind of situation, and yet they didn't do the same thing we're doing now. They didn't sacrifice all their liberty at the altar of security. This really is a medical 9/11. Now, the American people are being manipulated, I think, intentionally into this false choice of a perpetual emergency mindset. Because then what's next? Then every flu that comes through, you know, COVID-19, as you said earlier, it's been shown to be, you know, those people are not going to have a problem with it. It's the elderly, those with pre-existing conditions, et cetera. So the effect of it has not been as dire as predicted. And yet they still want you to say, well, now it's like, well, if it could save one life, you're going to give it your liberty. So then what's next? The next flu that comes through, do the exact same thing, lock us down? And this is kind of going back to the fundamental question about constitutionality. You have governors who are making law as they go. There's opening their mouth and law comes out. That's what dictatorship is. A dictator dictates, and the law is whatever he says it is. Mussolini, Hitler, Stalin, they just opened their mouths and law came out. The governors are now behaving exactly the same way. There's no state statute that lays out what is an essential or non-essential business or essential or non-essential activity during a pandemic and delegates to the governor the authority to shut them down. There's no law. There's no clear legal standard. It's both overbroad and void for vagueness. But the fundamental point is the governor has no authority to make law. The violation of separation of powers. The legislature makes law. The executive executes the law. And that's what's being violated, threshold point.
Stuart, why did these states fall like dominoes when one shut down, then another one and another one? Why didn't anybody stand up and say, this is ludicrous, I'm not shutting my state down?
South Dakota, she is a shining example of just that. She took the same exact approach that Sweden did as a whole country. She said, hey, I'm going to give recommendations. I'm going to go ahead and pass on the CDC recommendations and the Trump administration's recommendations. But I'm going to leave it up to the people of South Dakota, who are adults and are mature people, to do their best to keep themselves safe while we carry on. She did not do a shutdown. She did not make arbitrary and capricious determinations of what's essential and not, like ludicrous stuff about, well, Walmart's wide open. You can go into a Walmart. If I have to buy a pot or pan, I can go into a Walmart. And I can go buy that in Texas. I can't go to a pot and pan store, even though the pot and pan store probably be safer. I'm exposed to fewer people, right? But no, I can't go there. I got to go to the Walmart because Walmart's been decreed as essential, and the little small stores decreed as non-essential. And that's kind of weird how that works. Only the big box stores were open in a lot of these communities.
So one state out of 50, right?
Oh no, it's South Dakota is a shining example, but I believe Wyoming's another one. There's several others.
Not a lot, though.
No, not a lot. Only like eight in different varying degrees. South Dakota is the most, you know, the shining example. But only about eight out of all the states didn't do a total lockdown. The rest of them did some version of a lockdown. And frankly, this all goes right back to President Trump. He issued the guidelines through DHS that said, here are the guidelines for the states on essential versus non-essential functions and activities and businesses. Even though they said they're guidelines, not an order, they were intended to be used by the states and have been used by the states to then issue executive orders.
Stay with us, Stuart. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk more about why is this COVID-19 being hyped so much. You know, I've been in the media since I was 19, and I've never seen anything like this before. And we'll talk about that and some other issues. Stuart Rhodes, our special guest, will take calls with him next hour here on Coast to Coast. His website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It is called oathkeepers.org. We will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Stuart Rhodes with us. Stuart's website, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It is called oathkeepers.org. Stuart, I've been in the media since I was 19 years old, and I've never seen them handling a story like this in all my life. I mean, I was so opposed to the daily death counts, the number of people who were infected. I think they created a hysteria, and I want your reaction to this hype. What do you think?
No, I think you're right, and that's why I make that's why I call it a medical 9/11. I think 9/11 is the only other occurrence you can point to where it was 24/7 coverage of the threat to terror of terrorism, that drumbeat that led to the Patriot Act and led to some incredibly dangerous precedents, including Supreme Court precedents that you know allowed American citizens to be tamed. The extraordinary rendition, people being sent all over the world and being tortured, all in the name of security. And then people are willing to set aside their liberty, including the courts, in times of great fear or great anger. So I think this is much like that. This is a drumbeat to maximize the fear. And what always with the same conclusion, that the only way for you to be, quote-unquote, safe is to give up your liberty, to stay home, to shut your business down, to suspend your church services, to not protest. I mean, to have the governor, every day you're looking at the governor, it's kind of like, you know, waiting to see whether the groundhog is going to see a shadow this day. What's the governor going to say today? What are we allowed to do today or what are we not allowed to do today? Tune in and find out what you can and cannot do. And so this is actually worse than 9/11. So because they're getting into your micromanaging your daily lives in minutia and shutting down businesses, this is something that's just unprecedented. Unless you go to the Soviet Union or Nazi Germany, mm-hmm. There they had commissars who would tell you whether you're essential or non-essential from day to day.
Or China. I've always told myself when events happen, who benefits? Whether it was 9/11, World War One and Two. Who benefits? And then once you start pinpointing things, you see some answers that you may or may not want to see. In this particular case, in your opinion, yes, it's a tragedy. People have died. But who's benefiting?
Number one, the pharmaceutical companies who are going to make trillions of dollars off of you with the answer, you know, the quote-unquote answer, to this great emergency. Just like post 9/11, who benefited? It was the intelligence services, it was people that did all of the surveillance technology and drone technology. Obviously the arms manufacturers benefited. That was the beneficiary of that perpetual war on terrorism, 20 years now of fighting this war. That's who benefited. Halliburton, all of those companies benefited greatly. Now it's very much the same thing. Mega corporations that manufacture drugs and the test kits and the treatment protocols and the ventilators and all the protective equipment and, of course, the vaccine itself. That's who's benefiting right now. And they don't want it to go away. That's why they will not let you subscribe or prescribe. They're keeping doctors from prescribing hydroxychloroquine. A good example of a doctor in Dallas that spoke a week ago at an event that I was at. I spoke there too. But she was pointing out that she's not allowed. She goes to the local pharmacy. The pharmacist will ask her, well, what's your diagnosis? Why are you asking for hydroxychloroquine? And she said, well, you don't need to know that. But she wound up having to tell him it's for something else of COVID-19. He would not issue it for COVID-19.
Are they taking advantage of a real situation, or might they have created the real situation?
Well, I think it's a real virus. That's why I differ with some people in the liberty movement. I think it's a real virus that can have a serious effects. It's nowhere like the Spanish flu and certainly nowhere like smallpox. So I think in that sense, they are exaggerating it. And this is the problem. You can't trust the numbers. Now we know that they're being told, people are being told in hospitals to record if the person tests positive for COVID-19, if they died from something else.
They put down 19. And that's why those numbers are so high.
Pardon?
That's why those numbers look so high.
Right. So now you wind up, and this is the situation we're in, is the American people, or a large section of the American people, both left and right, don't trust what they see coming out of these official numbers, because they either they have a background and understanding, like I do, the hype after 9/11, and they don't trust the officials, or they have a background in not trusting the vaccinations or not trusting the pharmaceutical companies for good reason. So I think there's a lot of very well-founded suspicion about why this is being done. And like you said, who benefits? In the end, it's these mega corporations who are going to make trillions of dollars. The same people who have benefited over the years from diabetes type 2, keeping Americans fat, sick, and nearly dead. They don't teach you how to take care of yourself. They don't teach you proper nutrition. All they teach you is you need to take a drug to feel better.
Do these people have any souls or conscience?
Well, I think a lot of them are sociopaths. And this is kind of the problem with politics, too. Who tends to go into politics? It's people that want power. They love power above all other things. And I think the same is true of mega corporations that, you know, like Monsanto, for example. I don't think they care about people. They have no empathy, so they're sociopaths.
So what are you seeing outside of the streets? I mean, did you protest with Alex Jones in Texas when they had that a couple weeks ago?
Well, I was there for Shelley Luther's rally before she went for a hearing. I was standing outside of the court when she was sentenced by the judge for contempt of court, and she refused to bow. This is another good example.
That's the Dallas salon owner, right? Owner? Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah, she's a Dallas salon owner. She refused to bow and admit she was wrong. The judge told her that if you will admit you're wrong, admit you're being selfish, and apologize to the officials that you disobeyed, I won't put you in jail. That's a violation of the Fifth Amendment right to not be coerced into self-incrimination. But he did it right there from the bench, and she refused to do it. She went to jail. And then we were outside protesting that, and then we went and protested outside the judge's house. Now, usually I don't approve of that, but in this situation, he was so egregious and took upon himself, you know, to such a power over an individual to try to compel her to self-incriminate that I thought he deserved it. So we went and protested outside of her house.
Let me ask you this, Stuart. What happens when it gets out of hand, really gets out of hand, and I hope to God it does not, but will sheriffs and police officers and military folks who may be called up, will they stand down?
Some will and some won't. This is just reality of human nature. You are seeing some police officers like Greg Anderson out of Washington State standing up and saying this is wrong, and encouraging other police officers to take a stand as well. And, of course, we support that. And whenever they do that, we encourage everyone to go out there and support them. We donated to his GoFundMe. But other folks like the JeffersonFund.com are folks that are raising GoFundMes for him and other police officers. We're doing the same thing. So I think it's important to support them, because they do have a duty. This is what I learned when I served as a paratrooper. You have a duty to refuse unlawful orders. And people, of course, will say, well, hey, if the police don't get to decide what's lawful and what's not lawful, you know, I have to wait for the court to decide. That's not how it works. When I was a paratrooper, if I was given an order, like in my life, for example, in Vietnam, where Lieutenant Cowley defended himself by saying, I was just following orders. He followed orders to shoot women and children. The military courts said that's not a valid defense. Same thing we told the Nazis at Nuremberg. I have to make an individual decision as a paratrooper whether or not the order I've been given is lawful or unlawful. And if I disobey a lawful order, I can go to Leavenworth. If I obey an unlawful order, I can go to Leavenworth. You're on the hot seat either way. The same is true for a beat cop on the street. A sheriff deputy or a police officer has a duty to say no to unlawful orders. And that comes right from the Constitution itself. In Article 6, the founders wrote in there that this is the supreme law of the land, the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and every officer, executive, legislative, and judicial, must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution at federal and state level. All of them take that oath. So it's not just simply, we'll do what we're told until a court says no. In that case, the oath would be to follow all orders until a court says no. It's not the oath.
Why do you think They want this to happen at this point, Stuart. And when I say they, I'll talk about the globalists, those that want to take the United States down. They can't do it militarily, but you sure can do it economically, and look what's happening. What do they gain from this?
Well, you're right. You can weaken the country, put people in perpetual servitude, reduce us to third-class status, or, you know, third-world status, and then at the same time, have a perpetual emergency. And it's the same thing that happened with what Eisenhower warned us about, right? The military-industrial complex, after World War II, we never went back to a peacetime footing. It was a perpetual war in the name of the Cold War. And that's who killed Kennedy, right? It was the military-industrial complex and the CIA, which is called the intelligence-industrial complex. And since then, and since that coup, we've been living under this oligarchy of what you call a shadow government. The same people funded the war on drugs, and we now know that the CIA was running drugs. That's just common knowledge now. So you're amplifying dysfunction in a society at the same time gathering and growing your power. And the same thing happened post 9/11. So it's just been the war on terrorism, perpetual war. And it never goes away, and it justifies increasing encroachments on your liberties. And they always tell you the only way you can be safe is give us more power. Well, now it's the same thing here. Now it's like, well, we don't have enough power yet. So how do we get more power? Well, let's create a new boogeyman, the invisible enemy, as President Trump calls it. You know, so now let's go ahead and have a declare the war on viruses, and let's declare the war on a coronavirus, and then we'll be the flu next. And now the goalposts have been moved. Now it's simply, we're going to keep doing this until we get a cure, until we get a vaccine. And then you must take the vaccine. You must have contact traces. Right here in Texas, Governor Abbott is putting in place a scheme, a system of contact tracers. We've hired a company to go and trace people across Texas and quarantine them, forcibly quarantine them if they get COVID-19.
That's crazy. And you know what's also sad is the difference now between those who aren't wearing masks and those who are. If you're not wearing a mask and you're confronted by someone who is wearing one, it's almost like you, the person without the mask, has a plague or something already. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's just, it's out of control.
It is. And it's gone way beyond because, you know, initially when coronavirus first hit the United States, we didn't know what the effect was going to be. So you can almost understand we were all worried and concerned. But then it became quite clear, like in Sweden where they've done none of this and they're not all dropping dead like flies, it's become clear that if, as long as you're not in a high-risk category, you are extremely low. I don't wear a mask anymore. I did it for the first 2 weeks, and I realized this has been overblown. I stopped wearing a mask. I'm fit and healthy enough. I take my zinc and my vitamin D. I get outside, get sunshine.
Good.
I'm willing to risk it. And that's kind of the point. That was the point of the South Dakota governor. It's like, hey, shelter the vulnerable, and the rest of us drive on. And in Sweden, it's their overt policy to seek herd immunity. And when you stay inside, you decrease your immune system. You destroy it, actually, because you're not out there interacting with the world. You're like the boy in the bubble. You wind up with no immune system. That's something that the doctors in California pointed out, Dr. Erickson and his partner.
Are we going to win this? Can we defeat this situation that's happening out there right now? Because we can't continue doing what we're doing.
I think the answer is open defiance. You say, hey, first of all, A, it's unlawful. There's no law. You want to call an emergency session of the legislature, then you can fight about whether or not they're going to pass a law. Until then, we're not going to obey it. And, in fact, this next weekend, I'll be speaking for TexasFreedomCoalition.com. I'm putting together a rally at the Austin Capitol in Texas. I'll be speaking there along with Shelley Luther and Colonel Alan West. And that's the common message of all of us, is that live like free people. And you do not sacrifice the Bill of Rights. You have no duty to do so. In fact, you have a duty to resist it. That's what we're doing already in Texas, and we're doing that across the country.
How is Texas in terms of opening up? Is it still in pretty much a lockdown?
Well, it isn't. It's like a patchwork. The governor is starting to go into his phase two, or he's allowing some things to open up. And of course, after Shelley Luther was arrested and jailed, then he got a black eye from that. And so he said, well, there's no more criminal penalties. I'm not going to put anybody in jail for violating my orders. And so now you're seeing, you know, there was a gym owner in the county I'm in, Hood County, Texas, who opened up. We went out there and rallied in front of his place. At first, they pulled his business license. They threatened to arrest him. They did not do that because we were all outside waiting and, you know, showing support. They backed off. But then they pulled his license. And then, of course, the population made a big stink about that. and then the county reneged on that and went ahead and let him have his business license back. So it's just give and take. So I think what the common denominator is the more people that stand up, the stronger you're going to be together, united, and the more the bureaucrats back off.
I wonder how many people, Stuart, will get in line and take the vaccine if and when they go public with it and say, we've got one. It passed our trials. Yeah, right. But I wonder how many people would stand in line for the vaccine. What do you think?
Well, I think there's quite a few who would because they're drinking the Kool-Aid, but there's quite a few of us that I'm not afraid of COVID-19. I'm more afraid of the vaccine and what might be in it, especially when I know that the companies they're rushing it and they have zero liability. They've been sheltered. I don't want to be putting something in my body that I don't know what's in it, and I don't know that it's safe, and the company who makes it is under no obligation to make it safe. No thanks. I'm just not going to do it. Yeah. And there are millions of other Americans that have the same conviction. And that's why you're seeing a grassroots groundswell of resistance to this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's out of control. It truly is. Stuart, since you've been doing this, of course, tell us a little bit in the minutes we have before the break, and then we'll take calls with you next hour. Oath Keepers, what are you doing there?
Well, the whole point of Oath Keepers was post, when I saw what happened after 9/11, I was in law school during 9/11, and I wrote my major thesis on, you know, the abuse of the Constitution and name of security post 9/11. And I saw that, you know, by and large, the politicians and even the judges don't really care about your constitutional rights. And so it's going to devolve to the police in the streets saying no. And we are seeing some sheriffs saying no, some police officers, but not enough. And so a big part of our goal is to educate the average police officer and average soldier out there, hey, here are the constitutional lines. Here's your duty to say no. You know, just following orders is no valid defense. You know, go back to Nuremberg. So we teach them about that, and then we encourage them to do the right thing. And then, of course, we stand up, and people are being abused. We go and we show up. I have my retired police officers there to talk to the current serving cops, and their presence oftentimes keeps things calm because they're talking cop to cop. They can say, hey, man, I know what it's like. I've been there. You don't have to do this. You can use your discretion, you know, and it just changes the tone. And, of course, we also stand up against abuse. When we were at Ferguson, when they were during the riots, protecting
people. That's right.
People
not too far from where I am.
We also sent a very strong letter to the governor of Missouri condemning his use of curfews and use of tear gas against protesters. That's a violation of the First Amendment.
Stay with us, Stuart. We're going to come back and take phone calls with you. Stuart Rhodes with us, oathkeepers.org. That's his website. And we will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM to take your calls. So don't touch your dial. We'll be right back.